I'd like to call to order the Madison County Board of Education regular meeting. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Here.
Mr. Buds?
Here.
Mr. Dodds?
Here.
Mr. Mason?
Here.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Here.
Detwiler?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We are on a public communication. No one signed up for public communication. Did anyone wish to speak this evening? Hold in the audience? No. Seeing none, we will move on to board work session.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board grant a high school diploma to Clint Charles Williams, veteran.
I'll second that.
Discussion?
Yes, just speaking on behalf of the board, a few months ago, we realized that Madison Plains has always had the policy, but I wasn't aware of it. And I don't know how many times we've done it, I think a couple, but we have the ability under Ohio law to grant high school diplomas to veterans that dropped out of school to serve in either World War II, Korea, or Vietnam. The only criteria is that you dropped out of school, that you served in one of those wars, and that you served honorably. If those apply, you apply through the Madison County Veterans Association, which is in the basement of the Madison County Courthouse. And if they approve it, the school will issue a diploma. It is a full diploma. It's not an honorary diploma. Whatever rights and privileges go along with being a graduate of Madison Plains, you get those rights and privileges. So the first individual since I've been here to apply is Glenn Charles Williams, who passed away, I believe, in the late 70s, early 80s. His son, Glenn Thomas Williams, who happens to also be my cousin, is here tonight to accept on his behalf. My uncle served in World War II, was a Marine, was on the Battle of Iwo Jima for 20-some days, very combat veteran, very good man. Came back and raised a good family, lived a good life, part of the greatest generation. So at this time, we'd like Glenn Williams to come up and accept the award on behalf of his father.
Half of my dad, I've almost lost the words right now. It's a very emotional moment for me. I want to thank the Madison Plains School Board, this whole school system here, for what you've done for my dad here. My dad was a very humble man. He never bragged about his exploits on Iwo Jima. He had a lot of respect for the Japanese, didn't he, Eddie?
Yeah.
My dad fought hard. He was in the first wave, the first initial landing at Iwo Jima. The LST, we researched on the internet, didn't we? Come under heavy attack. My dad fought for our country very hard for 26 days. He saw the flag raising on Mount Suribachi. That is an historical moment in Marine Corps history. I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud to say that my dad served our country. Very proud to say that my dad was a great father to me. He's always there for us. And I want to tell a story here real quick. First of all, I want to thank my cousin Jimmy Mason. He went to the school. He's a graduate here. He's a school teacher. Came all the way from Tiffin, Ohio today after working all day to come down here to be here. He didn't know the story. I was about ready to tell him. The athletic director here, Matthew Mason, you, Mark Mason, your grandpa, your father, Eddie, Jimmy, went with my dad to join together in the service. And they went to Cincinnati, didn't they, Eddie?
Yep.
They joined together. Your dad ended up on the Navy and ended up in harm's way himself. He ended up on a ship that was sinking. Wasn't it? It's Battle of Okinawa. My dad ended up in a battle that cost the Marine Corps 8,800 Marines. Over 30% of the Marines were killed on the beach on the first day alone. 25,000 casualties in all, more than the Japanese would suffer, and they suffered 22,000 casualties. We're talking about an island. It was volcanic ash. It was only 8 square miles in diameter. If anybody knows the history of it, I'm sure a lot of you have seen the movies of it. You know what a bloody battle it was. I'm very proud that my dad was there. My dad was a great man. He was a great American. He taught me to love the flag, respect this country. God and honor, you know, came first with him the whole way. I'm very appreciative of this. I thank the school system, everybody. Thank all of you for doing this. future that deserve it just as well. And I appreciate it. This will, by the way, go in the case with my dad's medals.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Buds?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to board meeting security.
Yeah.
Question is, at our last meeting, we had some issues and concerns with our public participation. After talking with the sheriff's office, they had some suggestions for how we could improve some things. One of their main recommendations was that no bags be allowed to be brought in during our meeting, or if we do, we search those bags. I lean more on the side of just tell folks don't bring a bag. If not, we're going to be searching through bags of people from the public, and we don't want that. But we need to have more conversation about what we want to do. And the question I have for you tonight is, would you like to have one of the sheriff's deputies come out and just kind of talk to you about what they see and what they would recommend, so you hear directly from them? Just have a casual conversation about security of our meetings.
I think we always need to be more aware of security. I think certainly the last meeting, I need to be more aware, right, of those kinds of things. So I would welcome that. I don't know what you guys think.
I mean,
okay. I'll have them come out to our next meeting.
Great.
Okay. Thank you. That was it.
Is that it, Matt? Anything else for board work session? Anybody? No? Okay. We'll move to approval board then.
Madam President, I move that the minutes of the February 21st, 2017 meeting be approved as written.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Abstain.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-0.
Okay, we'll move to the Treasurer's Report. Mr. Mustine?
Mrs. Cooley?
Mm-hmm.
My report is brief tonight. I know these are hard to see when they're trying to fit a big spreadsheet all on one screen. So I just start off big and then I'll zoom in on the important part. Our total expenditures right now at this time of year are sitting at 0.3% above where we expect them to be based on our budget and our forecast. Also, you'll see that our budget, our FY17 budget here, and our current forecast that we approved in January are aligned. So those are the same also. So we're 0.3% over our projections for expenditures. For our revenue, 0.3% over on our revenue. And we're 2.3% under on our expenditures. So we're doing very well right now as far as what we projected. Also, I just want to point out the last meeting, we didn't have our real estate collection come in January like we thought, which is why we ended with such a low balance there, $500,000. You can see now in February, we received those collections, and now our ending balance is $4.1 million. So that's a big increase. However, it's a little misleading because it's just the timing of the collection. That's throwing that off. Also, at this time of year, normally I would expect to receive a little more in March for our real estate tax collection, but I think we received a little bit of that in February as well. So instead of receiving a little bit in January, a good bit in February, and a little bit in March, I think we've received most of that in February. So we'll see next month. But I think that's why that looks like we've had a 9% increase over this time last year. It's just based on that timing of that real estate disbursement collected. Right now on our revenue, or on our expenditures, at this time, same time of year last year, we're 2% up on our total expenditures, which is very reasonable considering the salary increases and percentage increases that we have built into the forecast, and they were negotiated in the last contracts. So those are trending right along where they should be. The last 3 years, you can see we've had a 2% increase in expenditures, a 1% increase last year, and right now we're sitting at 2%. So over the last 3 years, our expenditures are very flat. Moving on down through our cash balance. Right now you see our cash balance is $3.6 million. The green line reflects our actual. You can see we didn't hit in January where we thought we were going to be because of not collecting those real estate collections. So that dropped us here off of our expectation. But I projected that we would recover and more so, and that's what happened here. That's why we're sharply above the line. You see that sharp increase. And based on the fact that we won't receive quite as much in March, I don't believe, I think that'll come down onto the trend line here. We'll probably adjust right back down and be pretty much on target from where we expect to end the year. The red is zero, so anything below the line would be in a deficit. Can see where we stay above the line for this year, and we don't project to go below the line until sometimes next year and 19, even though we will end up in the black. We can project we'll end up in the black. So that's just some explanation there on the real estate tax collections is the big thing there. In January, we didn't receive it when we thought we would. We received most of it in February, and even probably what we expect to receive in March, we received some in February. So. That's all I have on my financial report. Does anybody have any questions on that? And the other item that I have listed is the levy timeline discussion. If we were to propose a levy, this is the timeline that we would need to follow to get something on for the August special election. I'm just going to read it here to you. The board is going to adopt two resolutions. The first be filed with the Madison County Auditor, and the second be filed together with the first and the auditor's certificate with the Board of Elections. May 5th, 2017 is our auditor filing deadline, and May 10th, 2017 is our Board of Elections filing deadline for the August 8th ballot. That is based off of the election calendar, off of the Secretary of State's website. And you see here, May 10th is that deadline, and then the August 8th special election.
Is what it will cost the district to put it on the ballot, does that just vary depending on if there's other issues that are on there?
Correct. So we will have to pass the resolution, approve it twice, vote on it twice, sometime between now and May 5th, and to get that filed correctly.
Your first resolution is asking the county auditor to certify millage. Second resolution is the board is basically telling the treasurer to proceed with filing. And 1 week, if you're looking at your calendars, 1 week between is really kind of a narrow window for the county auditor to do the certification. So that's normally a 2 week window we try to give them. So if you try to work around our April 18th board meeting, then we have to back up 2 weeks from there to have a meeting for the first vote. So we kind of.
In the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Good news is we do have the paperwork drawn up already.
Okay.
We will just need to fill in the applicable amounts once we determine those.
I don't know if you want to set that time tonight, or if you want to take your time, look at your calendars, and let us know, and then we can announce, or if you would like to do that.
We're trying to look at your calendars to see what you have available. I think we should probably do it while we're here.
Yeah.
Since we have calendar challenges.
One thing I will say from the gallery as well, this doesn't mean it's a done deal.
Right.
Like I said at our last meeting, it takes two votes of the board to place anything on the ballot. First vote is simply saying, hey, treasurer, go get the millage from the county auditor for that levy. Then the next one is the one that says proceed to file. So the second vote is the most critical, but you got to do both.
So we'd probably look at the first week in April is what you're saying, because you need to do it 2 weeks before the 18th meeting. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, you'd be somewhere around the 4th of April, probably be the latest you'd want to go. That gives
okay.
I'm good on the 4th.
4th doesn't work for me. I could do the 3rd.
for that entire week.
Yeah, I can do the third too.
I cannot be here.
Not to work.
So go ahead and have the meeting.
Okay. We could back it. That's spring break, right, the 29th. So
the Europe trip is from the 28th through the 8th.
Oh, okay, well then there you go. Okay, so, so we have to do it before the 28th is what, really?
Yeah, we can't do that.
So it would have to be the 27th, which is Monday. That's if you're out till the 8th, right? Because you have to have it before then, right?
Can we do it the week of April 10th?
Is that too close, I think?
She can do it. The risk you take is if, for example, if
the
Jennifer's
doesn't
out.
Have it back.
For example, if she's out.
I could do it on the 27th. I'm good on the 27th. How's everybody else?
I can make it work.
Yeah, I think we do it soon. Yeah, before we run into problems. 27th.
6 o'clock.
Do you want to do 6 o'clock? Okay. Everybody set 6 on the 27th? March 27th, 6 o'clock. Special meeting. Okay.
That concludes my report.
Okay, thanks, Todd. We will move to financial action items. I make a motion that upon recommendation of the Treasurer, the February 2017 financial statements be accepted as presented.
I'll second that.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of Treasurer, the Board approve the transfer of $3,000 from the senior class of 2016-2017 to the senior class of 2017-2018.
Second.
Discussion?
Yeah, this is essentially a donation from one class to the other. So since they're both student activity funds, but they're both separate cost centers, so that's why we're approving it as a transfer.
Very nice. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zanikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Okay, we will move to Mr. Detmeyer's section.
Thank you very much. We have three presentations. We'll start out with Mrs. LeGault in the K-6 presentation. I believe she has a few winners to speak to.
Two people I'm bringing up with me today, right after school, we had our invention convention, our sixth grade science fair. So back in November, Ms. Gauss and Mrs. Ernst started working with all of our sixth grade students who looked at a common problem that there's already a product or something out there, and then they have made it better, that works better for them. And then we had partnered up with junior high students who came down last week, and they did the first round of interviews. So every student had to do public speaking, had to create presentation boards as well as their projects. We took the top 23 students, made it into the finals tonight. We had 11 judges. You kids got judged for a long time, didn't you? We got judged by several people, several different backgrounds, and tonight our first place winner is here with us, and we have Benson. Do you want to tell the board a little bit about your project and what you did?
My invention was Velcro shoelaces, and the reason I chose that was because I have... The reason I did this is because I have problems having my shoes tight enough where they don't come undone, and I tested these in my basketball game, and they did not come untied.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any questions?
How's it work? Let me see.
Show me where the Velcro is.
Let's see, there's another one. I'll ask you that. You need for my little. That might have been one of the only ones. I'm like, no, really, show me Tyler.
Show this. I want to see it. That's cool. Yeah. Oh, like the whole length.
Smart.
Wait, it's for my vision. All the choices are open.
Nice.
Awesome job.
Our second place winner. We just finished awards about 6:45, so several of our students were. They didn't know ahead of time because they didn't know their placings. Had animals to care for, little siblings that needed the head home. There were little children running around everywhere, which is good. I like it when the students and parents come in. But our second place winner was Molly Fay. Our third place winner,
Kenzie Knoll.
Thank you, Kenzie Knoll. And then we had three honorable mentions because the kids did such a fantastic job. We had Dylan Evans, Cameron Dennehay, and Aiden Wilk.
Good job. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
Good job. Congratulations. And then one thing I just want to kind of touch base with you on, let you know about our Right to Read Week festivities we had last week. We were lucky enough, we had an author in residence come in, and he was in most mornings before me. So he was rolling in at 7:10 in the morning. I get in about 7:15 with mine. He laughed first time he saw my van open, I bring six kids. But he fit in fantastic with our students and our staff. He was in every classroom. Every one of our students went through the writing process from the beginning to the end, created stories. So, and he worked with kindergarten through sixth grade. He's an author of both picture books and chapter books. And he truly made Madison Plains his home last week. And I will tell you, every single day, he did nothing but compliment our students and our staff. Every day, he was stopping people, commending the students and staff on how well behaved they were, what good thinkers we had, and how respectful everybody was. And if you would be, he had a great personality, very easy to get along with. I believe truly he was genuine in what he was saying. He's originally from Michigan, relocating back to Ohio. He was very thankful that we took a risk on him coming in. And then on Friday afternoon, he had his writing Olympics, and Tula came in as a guest judge, and Tim was in as the judge, and I was the judge, and every story got read in front of the students. They illustrated the stories, and some were very comical. We threw him for a loop, our judging panel. He thought we would choose all the sweet and loving stories, and we did not as our favorites, but the kids, you know, we tried to, don't let him know whose it is. And the excitement in the room was overwhelming, actually, listening to the kids. So they did a fantastic job, and that was a great opportunity. I know that my daughters who were in fifth grade had never had an author come to the school as long as we've been here. So that's the first one I know since we've consolidated that we've had an author come in and spend that amount of time, and actually being able to have one come and spend an entire week. And he was here well beyond the students leaving every day. Any students who purchased books, he signed every one of them for all of our students. And he actually sent me an email a couple days ago and said he signed 182 books while he was here. And he had also donated 31 prior to coming. So every classroom had a book prior to him being here. So they were well-versed in the types of stories that he had. So I just wanted to let you guys know that that took place. I have now sent you guys pictures and stories. So we should be seeing some things with that in the paper as well. Thank you for this afternoon.
Sweet.
Kim, I think one of the things to add to that he kept saying over and over again is he goes to a lot of different schools. And I don't think he was just saying it out of being nice. He said, you don't realize what a special place you have here. He said, because I go to schools and I get immersed in their culture and I find out what they're like. And he said, I could stay here the rest of my time if I had my druthers.
That's
so, that was very nice of him to say. And I think it was heartfelt.
And the other thing, going and supporting that was the surprise that he had with how well our staff was receptive. He said, there are so many times I go into a school and the teacher's like, oh yeah, I sent you the books, but we haven't gotten around to reading it. And almost everybody was finished. He had said, only read the first half of the chapter book, but I think the kids were pushing the teachers. And it was really just encouraging our kids to read. And so one of the things as that was going on, the students had a challenge between the elementary and intermediate, who gets to read the most, who read the most books. And Mr. Miller and I both agreed that to some things. So tomorrow I'm sure you'll see lovely pictures because we decided that with the amount of books that our students read last week, we did not do an official count. but I can't even begin to guess the amount that we dumped at our floor, little slips of paper. Thousands of books were read last week. So tomorrow, Mr. Miller and I are getting duct taped to a wall and our hair spray painted green prior to, right before the Jeff Spradlin Dodgeball, Memorial Dodgeball tournament. So
what time is that specifically?
Yeah. 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock. And then we're going to stay that way to the Dodgeball tournament. But I would also encourage you guys to come to the Dodgeball tournament. All of the proceeds from that, we have our 4, 5, and 6 intermediate students put together dodgeball teams, staff members will be playing, and all of those proceeds will be scholarships that are given out directly back. They keep no money held into that account. It all goes directly back to our graduating seniors. So it's $1 admission for anybody to come in to watch the dodgeball tournament. And like I said, all of those proceeds go right back in to supporting our seniors who are graduating and furthering their education. So if you want to come laugh at us again, come join us tomorrow.
What time's the dodgeball tournament start?
It'll start about 3:30, okay. 4 o'clock, but it'll probably go, I'm guessing, until 6, 7 o'clock by the time we're all done. I think we have 22 teams that are signed up.
Wow. Okay. Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Next up, we will move on to Dr. Unger, 712.
To continue each meeting, we've been recognizing members of our staff, and this week we're going to talk about a couple of our English teachers. First up is Meredith Smith. A little bit about her background. She has a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Findlay. She graduated in 2011. Master's degree from Kent State University. That's in progress. She hopes to have it by this December. Her hometown is Kenton, Ohio. She likes the small rural community, and she believes that her colleagues are and her students are second to none. Meredith also spends a lot of time working with various different student groups. She works with our yearbook and is the advisor for that and helps the students put that together. That's her passion for publishing that she has in journalism. She has also served as a cheerleading advisor for us, and you can see her volunteering in several different events. She works with the prom each year. The last couple of years she's been a prom advisor with somebody else. Puts in a lot of time at the school, and we really appreciate the work she does. Kind of a review of what I just said. Next December, she's going to be graduating with a master's degree in scholastic journalism. She's a huge advocate of journalism in high school and teaching it to youth. Matter of fact, she's been working with the Columbus Blue Jackets. She's taking kids up there for a journalism day to promote journalism within our school. Does a lot of fantastic things, goes above and beyond as an English teacher to teach English, not just as an academic area, but the application of English. Something you may not know about her, she does come from a fairly large family farm in northwest Ohio. She enjoys connecting with the kids, talking about crops, livestock, and John Deere equipment. Meredith fits in really good with the students. She teaches most of our senior English, and she's a very big asset here at Madison Plains. Our second English teacher we want to talk about is somebody that's been around here for a little while. It's Tammy Pitstick. She has a Bachelor's of Arts in English and Literature from Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. I was corrected. I said the University of Miami.
That's right. Yeah. State.
That was a mistake. She has a master's education from the University of Dayton. She comes from South Charleston, Ohio. Tammy believes that Madison Plains is an environment in which students appreciate what they are given. She has a sincere interest in their growth and assurance in their safety, dedication to enrichment, and a daily commitment to encouragement. One thing about Tammy, you go into her classroom and you're going to notice that she has mounds of stuff and it's student data. She's probably one of the first teachers we had here that actually used student data in order to drive her instruction. And it's all paper-based. So she's in the process, and it's a little frustrating for her to transition that from paper data electronic data, but she's doing a very good job of it. She goes above and beyond trying to help her students out. I was in her classroom doing an observation this last week, and the interesting thing is you go into her English classroom and you see actually true dialogue between the teacher and the student. Kids were eager to learn, they were interested in the subject, they were engaged in the lesson. The kids were learning in the classroom and didn't realize they were learning. They thought they were having fun, and they were interested in the topic and how the writing was done. They were developing thesis statements, which can be a pretty dry and dull topic, but they were all engaged in that class. Wonderful junior high teacher. Some interesting facts about Tammy, and she kind of keeps this stuff hidden. She doesn't come out and brag about herself a lot. In 2005, she was the Walmart Teacher of the Year. During that year, she was summoned and bused by a television producer to Cleveland, Ohio, where she appeared three times on a live television show with her students, and they read their creative writing. You know, it's amazing. You know, we don't have too many teachers that have had the opportunity to do that. And then some funny things down here at the bottom that she mentioned. She said, giving up her dream of becoming a backup dancer for Madonna. And after her second dream of opening her own dance studio, she settled for dancing on stage with the Smashing Pumpkins. She says, "Where that is a true story." yes, she is a concert junkie, and her dedication to the secular remains. And you know, if you know Tammy, she's really dedicated to her students. These pictures here are actually from Power of the Pen. They've expanded, and you approved a supplemental to expand that Power of the Pen for the junior high, 7th and 8th grade, and her along with Mr. Stokes to have a lot of success, huge success this year with Power of the Pen. And as you can see, we've got a lot of junior high students that are engaged in writing. They're talking about warrants and claims and stuff in their classroom, and they're using that information to see purpose in writing. It's just not an academic thing. It's something that they have to jump through, but there is a reason for it. A little bit more about the Power of the Pen. Our league that we're in is looking into moving this program into the high school. So that's something you're probably going to hear from us in the near future about some opportunities to do some of this Power of the Pen competition in writing along with our other league schools later on next year. So it's something we're probably going to end up doing. This past a few weeks, go ahead and move past this. That's all I have about staff presentations. A few things that's been going on. We just had National Honor Society induction. We inducted several individuals into the National Honor Society. If you were there, it was a wonderful ceremony. Advisors did a really good job of that. Congratulations to the students involved. We'd be here all night long if I went through the list of everybody that participated. There were several of them. We just had the Scholastic Booster Auction. It was a huge success, raised over $18,000. Which Mr. Jackson believes it's a record, so that I think it is back several years. So he was very pleased in how that went and operated and the community support for that. This week, we got back our pre-ACT results. We've implemented a program in order to prepare our kids for ACT testing, and the pre-ACT was the first thing we gave. We got those results. It took, about a week. From when they took the test to we had results back, which is, I don't know, ACT can do that, but the state of Ohio takes about 6 months to do it. But we have that information. It's being uploaded into the system so that we can use that data in order to place students in the proper classes for this next year, and we check the placements that we already have. We took the ACT test today. All of our juniors did that. Went off without a hitch, as far as we know. That stuff's going to be sent off tomorrow for scoring and so on. And we have our first air test tomorrow and Wednesday. So we've got a lot of testing going on. As I told all of our teachers, the testing season has started. Kind of off to the races. We do have a motivational speaker coming in April to kind of give our kids a boost and kind of motivate them to work hard on their tests and so on. And last thing, we have the FFA banquet this Thursday. I'm sure you guys all got invitations to that. Lots of exciting things going on in Madison Plains Junior Senior High School. I'd like to see you in the building. You're welcome to stop by anytime, talk to us, and show you what's going on. Thank you.
Matt, I'm sure that the ACT testing going off without a hitch was probably due to the person that was managing it, right?
Yes, it was.
That'd be Stormy Hiram.
Stormy Hiram.
Oh, right. Of
course,
right.
Stormy is started working with the ACT last year. Yeah. Actually, worked with her for several
years.
And she kind of took over that, the reins of that program for us here. And the nice thing was that she knew all the details that had to be done as far as the individual smaller testings. The only difference was this, as she said, was a much larger scale, a lot more work as far as getting all the stuff set up. They set the gymnasium up the night before, or the day before for that testing, because the kids, it's a 3.5 hour long test. So in order to get that test in before lunchtime, they had everything prepared ahead of time, all the main parts, and get the kids right in, shuffle them in, start off on the test so they could finish before their lunchtime.
Thank you, Matt. And last presentation, last but not least, certainly, is our Director of Operations, Mr. Penny.
Good evening.
I'm going to go ahead and transition us a little bit over to facilities and the maintenance of facilities. On presentations, I always try to have some current picture involving the students. So, congratulations to them. I believe they came in second place. The powerlifting club, is that correct?
Yeah.
So to begin, most of you have seen this slide. I'll go through it fairly quick, then I'm going to give you a general overview tonight. Trying to go too in-depth. Those of you who know me well know that I love going in-depth, and I'll try to keep it very surface level for you. Okay. With that being said, I want to start with something you've seen before, the quality assurance process that we go through. This is for many departments, not just maintenance. But something we look at is monitoring, managing, and improving. And ultimately, we're looking at monitoring, but then also the degree of investment we need to put in when we make decisions about what type of improvements and how we are going to improve. And that comes down to looking at physical capital as well as what the needs of students and actual facilities are. Three of the primary objectives of the maintenance department is obviously maintenance, the breakdown maintenance, preventive routine maintenance, which, as I talked about last summer when I first started in this position, we really want to transition to a lot less breakdown maintenance and a lot more preventive maintenance. And we've been able to do this as a team this year for a lot of different areas. Projects, that speaks for itself, capital projects, standard projects, and service, installations and repairs. That's primarily how the maintenance department is broken down, the tasks they do. Okay, it's a little smaller than I thought it was going to be. In the right upper hand corner, you'll see a facility name, and boy, you're gonna have to get a magnifying glass, and I apologize. But also, the age of the facility, and then when it was built, because it goes hand in hand with what I'll be discussing here in a moment. Just for the people that can't see that, which I can barely see it.
I can see it. You
high school, 38 years. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a vision test. Junior high, we're on about 6 years with our newer modular buildings. Intermediate school, 61 years.
Wow.
And elementary school, 6 years. Okay. And the reason I pulled everything up just on one slide, and I can give you a moment just kind of look down through it, and I'll give you overviews of each topic. That'll probably be less. Okay, so I call this the essential areas of focus, because going into the summer and completing the school year with almost a year at least under my belt and also under the head of maintenance's belt, Brian Garrett, these are areas that we need to truly focus on and try to look at improving. For example, our sewage treatment plant. I put implications on each of these because it's important for everyone to know, you know, if these areas go down, there is a large impact. Loss of restroom facilities, loss of sinks, drinking fountains. That equates to school closure. Okay, obviously you can't run water without the sewage that goes along with it. The plant's 61 years old. Over that time, to the best of my knowledge, tracking back through our history, as much as I can, records, financial records, so forth, the majority of that plant is original. The concrete's original. The mechanicals are newer, because every 5 to 10 years, you're going to have your circulation pumps and your grinder motors, things like that, go out and they are going to need to be replaced. We are in a situation that, and this is going to be a common theme through this presentation, our redundancy. The plan was designed to have redundancy. So if one part of it went down, then that means that we don't halt, cancel school, and then, you know, try to repair, kind of in a reactive manner. We are currently running on one grinder pump out of two. We are currently running on one circulation pump out of two. And it's all kind of like boom, 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 they're going down. We also have to look at the overall physical construction of the plant. And what my advisement is going to be is we need to have an official assessment done on our sewage treatment plant. Because it is a specialty area, and we know that its age is 61 years old for the most part. So it would be irresponsible to go in, and we can try to just make general replacements, general repairs, and we've done that as long as I've been here at the district, just on different components of the district. But knowledge is power, and ultimately to make sound decisions as far as projecting out what we need financially to be able to cover different types of repairs, we have to get sound assessments done. I'm going to move to the next section. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Mr. Deadweiler?
No.
Stadium drinking water supply. Earlier this year, we had a pipe break going out to the stadium. It was really hard to swallow, and that's not a pun based on water and being drinking water. But with that being said, there was no shutoff between the field or the stadium and the actual intermediate school. Going water going from the intermediate school to the field house out to the field. So first thing, we had to clot the bleeding. I'll try not to go in depth, but we had to clot the bleeding by putting a curb stop in or at least putting a shutoff there. But with that being said, we have no water currently for drinking at the field. And that's something that I know with the track team, they're having to take water out, and they can do that. It's not ideal, and we don't like for the facilities not to be up to par, but this is something that we have to address by ultimately rerunning these lines. The lines are underground from the point that we actually put the curb stop in on out to the concession stands, and that's why I have students, staff, and community are impacted. All the way around that facility, which is the stadium, we have to redo the lines just based on them being galvanized and being over 40 years old. Because when we have breakage in those areas, in the area that we had, there's obviously other breakage in other areas. And we have someone from a contractor coming in and officially assessing that. So that's something that's high on the priority list and one of those essential areas of focus. High school HVAC. Okay, I list a lot of implications with this. I mean, ultimately, we look at facilities, at least we talk about frequently, as safe, warm, and water resistant, ultimately, the roofing and everything working on them. Climate uncomfortable for occupants. At times, due to the age of our system, as well as the efficiencies on our system, we have issues with this. And we'll hear this from students, we'll hear it from staff. We'll hear it from community members coming to games and other events. Another implication of the HVAC system going down is facility damage due to temperatures. There's times that we have issues, and this is in the past, as I was technology director and talking with Larry Kembler when he was head of maintenance and being here, that we have major facility damage due to pipes in the ceiling bursting. That building was designed with ventilators in the ceiling and pipes going around to the different ventilators. We do not have glycol in those lines, and glycol actually resists freezing. Okay, many of you probably knew that, but I figured I'd throw that in.
No, many of us didn't know that.
Okay. Thank you.
Whatever that is.
Well,
I'll take your word for it.
With that being said, what happened is your HVAC system goes down, gets really cold, they have issue with pipes bursting and things like that. Now, one of those pipes burst, as long as one of the check valves work, you only have water going over the floor in certain areas, which is damaging your facility and furniture and so forth. Now, with that being said, we have components that are 38 years old that there's a good chance that those check valves are going to be lined over and seized up. Okay, so I'm not trying to bring doom and gloom, but it's just a reality. So I listed the dates up there. Looking back back through the history, I see 22 years for the boilers, and we have two of them, and we have the chiller at 20 years plus. Components other than that, As I mentioned last summer, we have pneumatic controls in the building. Those are 4 generations old. We struggle greatly with having anyone being able to come in to work on those. And when we do have someone come work on them, because it's such a scarce commodity, they are very expensive. And it's hard to find somebody credible. The challenge with a lot of things we have here with being on the older side, and I understand there's old facilities in a lot of different areas, you know, outside of Madison Plains, but a lot of people talk the game, but they can't actually deliver. So you have them come in, and they say, oh yeah, I can work on that system, and they get in here and they say, I have no idea how to do it, and we get down the line a little bit with them, and we have to boot them out and try somebody or someone else.
Joe, they certainly won't warranty their work.
No, and one of the reasons for that is, over the years, to keep us running, which has been a blessing, we've done a lot of internal work, and there's nothing wrong with internal work. The challenge we have is, the system's lost cohesiveness by us taking and doing just patches and band-aids all over it. So when we have a reputable company come in, they say, hey, we can repair this, but we see this was fixed in this way, and this was fixed in this way over here and over here, which made a lot of sense, for instance, just on a patch standpoint, but the reliability and the credibility of the system for them to actually stand behind their work, they say they won't do it. They'll stand behind their little piece of work that they did, nothing else. And that's one of the things coming in that I knew the high school HVAC system was a challenge just based on being at the district so long. And just hearing students, staff, and, well, like I said, being in the buildings, and trying to get people to come in and assess it and actually being willing to work on it, very challenging for us to do. What I'll say as far as on the implications as I close out the slide and move to the next one is reliability is key. Also, student and staff morale and recruitment. And I throw those student morale and staff morale because no one wants to be cold or incredibly hot. Okay? Especially when you go from one room and it feels warm and the other area feels very cold. And when you can't depend on something, it doesn't matter what your age is, whether you're my son's age, which is a kindergartner, I know he's not in high school, but for example, someone really young or a staff member, it hurts your morale. And it also hurts recruitment, in my opinion. This is not something that's been said by anyone else by me at this point, than me at this point, but if a teacher has a choice to work in a room that is climate controlled and comfortable versus one that's not, they're probably going to choose one they know they can rely on, especially to deliver the education to the students.
Joe, before you move on, I just want to put heavy emphasis on that first one. That, and Joe talked about it briefly, it says school closure, but that's one of those things that if something blows out that we don't anticipate we know it's failing. If it happens and we don't have the motor or whatever we need on site, that will close us. We don't have any other option because the entire campus is without sewage, and that's one of those things that we just can't operate without. So I'm just highlighting that we've had a lot of issues with that plant for a long time. Larry Kimbler did an outstanding job keeping it running, but that's all we were doing was keeping it running. So it's obviously getting to the end of its useful life, and so that pushes us into that next level of making some decisions. And I won't say any more because I might be cutting off Joe's presentation.
Oh, no, that's no problem. Okay. Thank you. Closing on the high school HVAC, this winter we've done what we've done a lot in the past, which is patchwork, make sure we get the job done. And unless it turns cold all of a sudden, we've got the job done. I don't believe that we should operate reactively. I know at times we have to, and that's one of the things I said during the summer last year. I see us, and as far as my philosophy on things, I'm extremely proactive. So getting an assessment done and having it done thoroughly for not just that, but other areas, which I'm going to get to on the next slide, is ultimately responsible, and it'll help us make sound decisions and save money in the future, I believe, by making those decisions.
Do we know how much we're spending on at least the first and the third one?
Like sewage plant?
Do you mean as far as repairs?
Yes, repairs during the year.
This year, just to do basic patchwork, and I'll give you approximations because I don't know the numbers in front of me, I believe the HVAC at the high school, we were around $15,000, and that's with running, instead of running the system at what I'll call fault tolerance, you know, from the technology world originally, fault tolerance or dual validity. We had one pump, and we're supposed to have two. We have one boiler down currently out of two. So we're running about 50% as far as if something goes down, we're hurting. With that being said, on sewage treatment, I'm not trying to backpedal. We have pumps on order. But the key for me, at least at this point, is we can replace a pump. But I don't want to always, as I keep stating, be in reactive mode. I want to know where we stand and what we need to do so that way we can make knowledgeable, educated decisions.
One thing, too, we talk about the cost. That's a drain on our DI fund. And that's what that DI fund is there for, our four expenditures like that. But it also takes away from being able to purchase things like classroom furniture and buses and other things that we might like to purchase as opposed to what we have to purchase for things like that.
So ultimately, $15,000 was just to get us by this year. And we know that what we put in got the job done. But like I said, it's that foundation of confidence that we know we have a plan moving in the future, moving forward in the future.
Joe, are our utility rates higher because of these inefficient systems?
What I'll say, and this will just be a blanket statement, we have very old systems. So there's going to be an efficiency that comes along with them.
Our utility rates aren't higher, but our usage, I'm sure, is higher. I'm sure it's not as an efficient system as what we could have.
The maintenance department of tolls, at their meeting last week, talked about some of the savings that they're having. Pretty significant savings.
Well, here's an example without going off path too much. For our boilers, we have thermostats in each room. Okay, some of them are DA, some of them are RA, which doesn't mean a lot to you guys, but it's just where we plugged in different parts, which is a DA system, so it made no sense RA parts being plugged in, which creates issues with the system working properly. That's one thing. But the other part of it is those thermostats will shut down parts of the system by closing a damper. Okay? Our boilers continue to run no matter what. So the only way the boilers shut down on the system we have at this point is on a timer. So that means that we're running propane through there, whether we need to heat that room or not, just based on the architecture and design of that system. In the 1970s, I'm sure it was a great system. And it's getting us by at this point. And once we get the feedback we need to understand where we are foundationally, then maybe we'll say, hey, we need to go ahead and pick this piece off here and try to fix that efficiency or make an improvement. But we might look at it and say, it doesn't make sense. We're pouring money in, putting money in the wrong places. We just need to go ahead and take care of the issue altogether and update. Okay. So this is my final slide. So I said I can get long-winded, so I'm going to try not to. I'm sorry I went off path a little bit there answering that question. But establish a foundation. This is something that I'm sure Tim and Todd gets tired of me saying, because I'm huge on this, and it goes along with being proactive. I believe that as much as possible, we need to have a complete assessment done of the whole facility, and as much as possible, the campus. This you can read for yourselves. I won't go through all of it. But what this will do, this assessment, and we have a company that's willing to come in and do it for us. And I've seen samples of it. It's very, very detailed. It puts dollars with it and their estimates and their real numbers. They're not just a contractor coming in saying, hey, I think it'll cost this or I think it'll cost that. This is what this company does, one of the things. And what it also allows to do is be able to look at the inefficiencies we have within our facilities and on the campus when it comes to operating and things we have to maintain. And it'll allow us to project out at least the numbers we get back from them in 5 years, and allow us to look and make strategic decisions on what is the highest priority. And as I said, safe, dry, and warm. I said in a little different order that time, but ultimately that's the most critical and crucial part of the equation here for our students that are coming here, as well as our staff that are here, anyone that's in the buildings. And then also the sewage treatment plant that's on the side, that's critical because if it's not functioning, we don't have school. So, building envelope, I won't go through all that. I had a few questions about fenestrations. That's ultimately your openings. That's your doors, that's your windows. I didn't mean to be fancy about it, but it's an easy way to put that instead of having a bunch of words down through the page. But this is something we'd like to move forward with, and this will allow us to make really strategic decisions on what we need to do next. And I put a little snippet down at the bottom, that foundational assessment is essential for responsible budgeting, education, and planning. I believe that's on multiple levels. I believe the information we'll get back from this is also something as a board that if Mr. Detweiler, and I'm sorry I'm putting words in your mouth, Okay, I'm trying not to.
No, you're good.
But it will allow you to look and see.
I'll correct you.
Stop you.
It will allow for the board, the community, as well as internally with the operations and decisions we're making, to be able to have information that is actually sound and not just based on opinion. It's based on where we literally stand with our facilities. And then depending on what decisions are made, we'll do the best we can from, I'll say, my end operational standpoint, and Brian Guerin, the maintenance department, and all the people that are in conjunction with that, to carry out the most sound decisions we can and also project out what will happen. We'll still have a break fix. I mean, that happens, but the more proactive we can get and looking and projecting and saying, hey, we see this come down the way, we see this, I believe we can have a much better product for our students, whether that is minimally just choosing what we need to repair and how we need to repair it in a time-sensitive manner, or the decision that these resources actually need to be replaced completely. Okay. And I'd like to thank you for your time.
And if you remember, I talked to the board several times about investing and over-investing in facilities. And that's where Joe's going with this. The assessment will tell us, okay, your sewage plant is failing. You've got to get this thing replaced, or if you just do this, this, and this, you can get through for another few years. That assessment is critical for us to know, because right now, you know, Joe and Brian are not sewage plant experts, and we need them in here to tell us. HVAC, we need experts in here to tell us. And Larry Kimbler, who's sitting right here, tell you, he wasn't an expert. He learned that system because he was here when they installed it. And he worked on it every year. But he wasn't quite sure how to repair it as a permanent fix. So we need to have some outside experts come in. So we are looking at having an assessment done. It'll be somewhat pricey, but as Joe pointed out, at the end of the day, if we have targeted investment to keep us going, it's well worth it. Because right now we're guessing, we're kind of playing whack-a-mole, especially with the sewage plant. From one day to the next, we're not sure what's going to fail.
I believe in our team. The wastewater sewage treatment plant is its own beast, and they're specialists that handle that. It's a very specialized industry. I didn't realize it until I got in this position. But I believe in our team as far as on other parts, on being able to make base repairs or contacting people that can. What I believe, though, is being reactive on it puts us at more of a risk on students and staff being uncomfortable in the buildings. Things not functioning when they're supposed to. That trust that we need to at least establish and have a plan to try to get out in front of, so we can provide the facilities that students, staff, and the community deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. As you know, on the agenda coming up, we have a vacancy that will be in place for next year. That's the special ed director's position in our district. To say that Mrs. Passwaters was just our special ed director for the 14 years that she was here is a vast understatement of everything that she was responsible for. Everything from CCIP, which I don't know why nobody else wanted to do that. That's our improvement plan through the state we have to file to get all of our federal funding. To homeless students, liaison, you name it, it got put on Trish. And she will leave a big hole in our administration that we'll have to fill. It's not easy to make that recommendation tonight, because it's like I told her when I first became superintendent, I count on you as one of the experts that's been here a long time to help me through, so, and she has done that. So that's a tough recommendation that you'll get from me later on. And then we also have a staff resignation. Mrs. McAllister, at the end of next school year, will be resigning. All the paperwork and all the documentation you've been provided behind that. There is an MOU that has been signed as well that gives us those assurances that the Board of Education and I myself wanted. So I think we are ready for the acceptance of that resignation tonight. So with that, I'll turn it over for your actions.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, we will move on. No unfinished business. We will move to new business.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of Superintendent, the Board approve the second and final reading of the following board policies as presented: JHCB, GBE, JFCF, and JFG.
Second.
Discussion on any of the policies? Roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board accept the resignation of Trish Passwaters, Special Education Director, effective June 26, 2017, at the end of her contract. Mrs. Passwaters has served the Madison Plains District for 14 years.
Second.
Discussion.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, Trish.
Point out how many years overall, Trish? 40?
40
years.
19 years as a special ed director.
Thank you.
Very impressed.
Call roll, please.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board accept the resignation of Roseanne McAllister, teacher, effective the end of the 2017-2018 school year. Ms. McAllister will have served the Madison Plains District for 18 years at the end of the 2017-2018 school year.
Second. Any discussion?
I do want to point out this is prompted on Mrs. McAllister's part due to a long-term illness that she's been fighting for a long time. And fought valiantly. I mean, she's taught through this for many years, this was a tough decision for her as well.
So. Thank you.
Is it still possible that she'll be done this year as well?
Absolutely. If her issues that are outstanding are resolved, then she would be resigning effective the end of this school year. So. And I'd bring that letter to you at that point.
Any other discussion? Okay. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board award the following supplemental contracts to be paid in accordance with the adopted negotiated contract for the 2016-2017 school year, as listed below.
Second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board authorize travel to Richmond, Indiana to provide MPHS baseball players a chance to combine a college campus visit at Earlham College and a college baseball experience and play a game in a minor league caliber stadium. All travel expenses will be paid through team fundraisers and through the athletic boosters. The trip will take place Saturday, May 6, 2017. There are no financial obligations to the board.
I'll second.
Discussion. Okay. Seeing none, call roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board authorize travel to England, France, and Spain for students in Spanish and cultural classes to expose them to different cultures and the opportunity to use the Spanish language. All travel expenses will be paid by students. The trip will take place Tuesday, March 28, 2017, through Friday, April 7, 2017. There are no financial obligations to the board.
Second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Madam President, I move that upon recommendation of superintendent, the board authorize travel to Philadelphia and New York City for all Civics English 2 students in good standing to broaden knowledge of the Enlightenment and the revolution, immigration, urbanization, and industry for the end of course. All travel expenses will be paid through student payments, sales, and donations. This trip will take place April 5th through the 8th, 2017. There are no financial obligations to the board.
Second.
Discussion. Call roll, please.
Mr. Dobbs?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mrs. Zinnikas?
Yes.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
I make a motion that upon recommendation of the superintendent, the board approve the following donations. As listed below from Kroger Rewards Counts.
Second.
Discussion? Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mrs. Eakes?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
I make a motion that we enter an executive session at 8:07 p.m. for the purpose of one or more of the following under Ohio Revised Code 121.22G, Section 1, to consider the appointment, employment, dismissal, discipline, promotion, demotion, or compensation of a public employee or official for the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or regulated individual.
Second.
Also number 5.
And number 5, to be added, matters required to become confidential by federal laws or rules or state statutes. Call roll, please.
Mrs. Cooley?
Yes.
Mr. Butts?
Yes.
Mr. Dodds?
Yes.
Mrs. Zedekas?
Yes.
Mr. Mason?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
We're taking no further action. The next regular meeting will be April. So we have one before that, a special meeting.